Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Wednesday, December 3rd. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, MDC extends Midland College's CDL training agreement, by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Midland College officials visited Midland Development Corporation, MDC, board members on Monday to request an amendment to their economic development agreement. "We're asking you today to consider an amendment and extension to the original target," said Purvis Evans, Dean of Continuing Education. He cited unexpected staffing disruptions that restricted instruction capacity and leadership changes in the college's workforce continuing education department for the failure to reach the target of 120 students by July 31st of this year. "We know that the economic impact of transportation training is huge. When you look at the entry-level, average salary, annual salary at $71,815 a year, and you multiply that by the 120 students that we target to graduate with this agreement, you're looking at an $8.6 million investment in new annual salaries for wages within our community. This is a huge impact, not just on our economy, but for the students. For many of our students, this is a life-changing transformation for them to go through this program that benefits their families, their communities, and of course, our economy. This brings up opportunities within our oil field logistics, infrastructure, construction, and delivery services that impacts us all," he said. Ariel Medina, a graduate of the transportation training program, called receiving his commercial driver's license a stepping stone to his career. He has gone from a truck driver to a CDL instructor to a Department of Transportation safety and compliance specialist. MDC board chairman Lorsey Sams asked about industry support for the CDL training program. Eric Juarez, Director of Transportation Training, assured that his department gets, quote, "plenty of employers knocking on our door in front of students. So we have that pipeline for students to get into jobs once they graduate," unquote. Board member Elvie Brown said he is super excited about this program. "I live in the south side of Midland. I support and work with children a bunch over there. And when I talk to mainly the boys, they say they're going to work in the oil field. They're going to be a welder. They're going to be a truck driver. Those three come up all the time. And so whatever we can do to create inroads to this career, this opportunity that changes the lives of people with the type of money they make to support that and to keep that alive. And I'm interested in, even in the future, what we might be able to do to support that in greater ways. I'd definitely be interested just hearing more." After the presentation, the board voted to amend and extend the agreement. This article is entitled, "Former Midland Staffer Takes Deputy City Manager Role in Odessa," by Trevor Hawes, editor. Odessa. City Council recently appointed Aaron Smith as its new city manager. Now, his second-in-command has been named. Former Midland Assistant City Manager Tina Yaus took over as Deputy City Manager in Odessa, according to an announcement made Monday. The shake-up in leadership comes on the heels of the sudden resignation of now former City Manager David Vella. His departure was approved October 28th, though he will stay on as the city's special projects coordinator for the rest of the year at his city manager pay rate, according to a previous Reporter Telegram report. Smith, who was Odessa's former assistant city manager, was approved to take Vella's place November 24th. His first day on the job was Monday. Yals was assistant city manager in Midland from 2021 through 2024. She was the city's director of community services for a decade prior. Yals most recently worked as a government relations coordinator at MVBA Law, according to her LinkedIn page. This article is entitled, Midland Nursery Offers Fresh Christmas Trees with Decor, by B.K. Richter, staff writer. For many Midland families, the Christmas tree is one of the central points of holiday decoration. Family portraits by the tree, and even decorating the tree, can be a fun family activity for the holiday season. Jan Otho, manager of La Casa Verde, said that her Midland nursery partners with Oregon Trail Fresh Christmas Tree every year to offer live trees to customers. The plant nursery adds another step by offering customers the opportunity to add artificial snow and lights to the live trees, while also offering delivery to Midland homes as well. I can remember having this tradition as a child, Otho reflected. We have been doing this, Christmas trees, for more than 30 years. While Christmas tree sales officially kicked off last week, Otho said other items, such as poinsettias and Christmas wreaths, are also available for purchase. We have got the poinsettias in red, pink, and white, said Otho. Poinsettias run from $12.99 to $16.99. If the customers, want to go ahead and get that now, it is kind of the time to come. Additionally, Otho advised customers not to water the poinsettias, but rather to place ice cubes in them. For the main attraction of Christmas trees, Otho said the smaller trees, such as the rosemary pine trees, will be in stock. Jamie and Trey Warren of Oregon Trail Fresh Christmas Trees are operating the tree side, while La Casa Verde handles the nursery. Warren said that every year that she and her husband purchase a truckload of trees from a grower in Oregon, which is then loaded onto a semi-trailer and delivered directly. Those trees are packed with ice in order to keep them fresh and are then stored in a holding pen which is shaded so that the trees can remain fresh until Christmas. The noble fir is the most common and the most traditional, Warren told the Reporter Telegram in an interview last year. Oregon Trail offers three different types of trees, including the Nordman fir, the noble fir, and the Douglas. Otho said the average cost of a tree ranges from $89 to $450, depending on the size and the type of the tree. The nursery also offers delivery services for the trees. Another feature, Otho said, includes adding Christmas lighting and flocking to the individual trees. Flocking means to have the appearance of freshly fallen snow, Otho explained. You can get it from a light dust to a heavy appearance. This year, Otho said one of the largest trees was more than 18 feet tall, which was delivered to Midland Country Club. It has about 15,000 lights on it, said Otho. It goes right up their spiral staircase and nearly touches the chandelier. So you have to get it down to the exact size. Store hours for La Casa Verde, located at 2615 North Midland Drive, are Monday through Saturday from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Otho said the store will be closed the week of Christmas as well as the week after. In addition to local nurseries, home improvement stores such as Lowe's and Home Depot also carry live trees, as do Tractor Supply and H-E-B. The Texas A&M Forest Service calculates that an average of 20 million to 25 million real Christmas trees are sold in the U.S. every year, or roughly one tree for every five households. This article is entitled News Briefs by B.K. Richter and Mella McEwen, staff writers. Midland County woman charged in check forgery. A woman has been arrested and charged by the Midland County Sheriff's Office with the forgery of a financial instrument, considered a state jail felony. According to an arrest affidavit obtained by the Reporter Telegram, Amy Lou Miller, 48, was arrested and detained by deputies on November 25th, following an incident dating back to January 31st. In the affidavit, investigators cited a phone call received from a local meat market regarding a company check that a female was trying to get cashed. When the meat market did not cash the check, investigators stated that Miller, accompanied by others, attempted to cash the check again at another location. When Miller was advised that the check was fraudulent, she allegedly proceeded to run out the front door of the check-cashing business with two other individuals. When investigators called Miller, they said she initially denied attempting to cash the fraudulent check. However, investigators said that after Miller was advised of the video surveillance showing her attempting to cash the check, she changed her statement. Investigators stated that Miller admitted to attempting to cash the fraudulent check and said that she was only doing so because her husband was in jail and she was afraid of losing her home. Investigators also stated in the affidavit that they were able to recover the check that Miller gave, and it was not similar to the legitimate company's check and appeared forged. Currently, Miller has been charged with two separate felonies, the forgery of a financial instrument, state jail felony, and the fraudulent possession or use of a credit or debit card. Each separate felony carries a $5,000 bail. MDC Board delays funding new task for MITRE Corporation. Plans to pay the MITRE Corporation $826,000 to execute task order number 2 to its master research and development agreement with Midland Development Corporation were tabled until a future board meeting. When the resolution authorizing the execution of the order was brought up at Monday's monthly board meeting, board member Brad Bullock raised doubts about what MITRE Corporation would provide for that $826,000. Bullock's concern was that in the original agreement between MDC and MITRE, they put some high-level planning that is included in this task order. But these additional things will be undertaken in a subsequent task order. So I know doing something like this is important to the high-speed corridor, which I'm fully in support of, but I'm just wondering, like, what dollar amount? Board member Zachary Deck also suggested tabling the resolution until further clarification is received from MITRE. Board members voted to table the resolution until a future board meeting, possibly January. This article is entitled Patch of Neighborhood Land Creates Debate on Housing Lot Sizes, by Luke Diaz, staff writer. Property located in the Country Sky neighborhood has recently sparked a debate over housing acreage. The land, which is zoned residential and is owned by the neighborhood's developer Country Estates, consists of an 11-acre patch of land on the west side of Coyote Trail. Sponsored by Magram Consulting, Country Estates intends to develop the land into 10 lots to construct single-family housing. However, scrutiny arose among Country Sky residents Craig Tellinghausen and Carol Maldonado, the former of whom has lived there with his wife for 23 years, predating when the land was annexed by the city, and the latter of whom lives in one of the houses directly next door to the property. The reason we moved out there is partly because the sunrises and sunsets are gorgeous, Tellinghausen recalled. Just having space out there, we love our neighbors, but it's nice to be able to stretch our arms and not bump into them. Tellinghausen says that he was involved in the initial discussions to annex the land as Country Sky, describing both those discussions and the subsequent development positively. However, he raised concern over the small size of each of the lots, claiming that the standard for housing lots is 2 acres, whereas the intended lots will be less than 1.5 acres each. My concern here is that dividing these 11 acres into 10 lots will change the character of our neighborhood, he said. People who have come out there come to enjoy that kind of atmosphere, and if we have houses that are too close together, the character of the neighborhood kind of changes. We didn't want any neighbors that close to us, Maldonado added. I don't even know who the property owner is. We've left messages with who I thought this person was, but I haven't been able to track him down. Neither Tellinghuizen nor Maldonado submitted formal objections, though their statements were put on record by Midland's Planning and Zoning Commission. Additionally, P&Z investigated Tellinghuizen's claims and confirmed that he was actually mistaken. Country Estates actually got approved to build lots at a minimum of 1 acre, not two. As such, the intended platting is in compliance with both Country Estates guidelines and the city's subsequent approval of the zoning. Another question brought up was from Terry Padford, a resident on the opposite side of Tumbleweed Trail, the street perpendicular to Coyote Trail, being on the west side of the land, compared to Coyote being on the east side from the land, who himself owns a 1 acre lot. Padford indicated that there are several water wells at the location and questioned if they will be receiving city water. I think there's 4 existing wells there, Padford said. Our water is very precious to us. Otherwise, we'd be paying a lot for our water usage. P&Z confirmed that it is ultimately up to the land developer on whether or not they want to connect to the city's water supply. In their application, Country Estates indicated that they would. P&Z ultimately recommended the platting for approval with a 6-1 vote. The request will be taken up at a later Midland City Council meeting. This article is entitled Young Entrepreneurs Launch Holiday Market by Kesley Salinas, staff writer. Centennial Park will turn into a holiday mini marketplace on Saturday as 29 young entrepreneurs of the Acton Children's Business Fair of Midland host the first ever holiday market. The holiday market is free and open to the public. It will be held from 4 p.m. to 7 p.m. and will feature festive booths, unique handmade gifts, and more. Young entrepreneurs ages 5 to 16 have imagined, designed, branded, and built their own business from scratch, according to Yucca Learning, an Acton academy. Students create a product or service, craft a marketing plan, and then open the business for customers at the one-day marketplace. Today's youth are tomorrow's business innovators and leaders, said Jeff Sandifer, founder of the Acton School of Business, one of the sponsors of the fair. The Children's Business Fair gives students the opportunity to spread their entrepreneurial wings and get a head start on promising business careers. During the Children's Business Fair, students are responsible for their own setup, sales, and customer interactions. To keep the experiences truly learner-driven, parents may observe, but not sell or promote during the event. The Children's Business Fair will also award a $50 cash prize in each of the 5 age groups, 6 to 8, 9 to 10, 11 to 12, 13 to 14, 15 to 16, in the following categories: most business potential, most creative idea, most impressive presentation. The holiday market is sponsored by Centennial Park in partnership with Yucca Learning and Acton Academy, along with the Birth Center of Midland, Simply Midland, Denali Traffic Solutions, and Gadsden Buildings of Stanton. This article is entitled Water Song Paves Way to Seek MDC Help with Expansion by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Leaders with Water Song Wild Space, formerly the I-20 Wildlife Preserve and Jenna Welch Nature Study Center, appeared before the Midland Development Corporation Board Monday to present their master expansion plan. We began putting together a master plan. Paul Davis and I funded that master plan years ago, and we have completed the first two phases of that, Elaine Magruder, president of the center's board, told board members. The master plan is a three-phase master plan, and the third phase is our building. Wes Farris, executive director, said the third phase involves construction of a 25,000-square-foot facility. The first phase of this facility will host the education wing that will house K-12 programs and a future accredited preschool. There are also plans for a space for research programs and a science wing. Magruder said Watersong had launched a quiet phase of its capital campaign to raise $27 million for the new facility, and within a few weeks had raised over $1 million. The public launch of the capital campaign is planned for next year. The goal is to raise 60%, or $17 million, by the end of 2026. We're reaching out to a lot of different areas in the community, from our corporate sponsors to individual sponsors to foundations and to the MDC to help with this project, Farris said. He added that Watersong would ask any MDC commitment be done over a three-year time frame, with the last phase coming in 2028. I wanted the board to see this deal because that's a super project. I think it's super for Midland. It's a potential promotional item that would fit with the MDC, said Lorsey Sams, MDC board chairman. Board member Elvie Brown asked about job creation, and Farris replied that beyond the construction jobs, a few new permanent jobs would be added because of the expanded facility. This is the Life Tributes column. Douglas Barton Page, October 13, 1947 to November 23, 2025. Douglas Barton Page, 78, of Midland, passed away on November 23rd. Doug was born on October 13, 1947, in Tulsa, Oklahoma, to the late Charles Newton Page and Lucy Rose Barton Page. As soon as he was able to travel, his mother returned from Oklahoma with her family back to Midland, and Doug has been a resident ever since. Doug married the love of his life, Jean Dawkins, on May 26, 1998. Through their union, he gained a host of Dawkins and Hildreth relatives. He was preceded in death by his parents, brother Donald Williams Page, and another infant sibling. His father and mother-in-law, Vern and Lily Mae Hildreth Dawkins, and brother-in-law, Donald Dawkins. He is survived by his devoted wife, Jean Dawkins Page, as well as a host of nieces, nephews, and numerous cousins. He will be laid to rest with his parents privately at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Services of care have been entrusted to Ellis Funeral Home. Memorial contributions can be made in his name to Midland Historical Society in Midland or a charity of your choice. Larry Don Roberts, December 25, 1941 to November 28, 2025. Larry Don Roberts went to be with his Savior on November 28. He was born in Stanton, Texas on December 25, 1941. Larry lived in Midland until his retirement in 2013, after which he and his wife Kathy moved to Grovetown, Georgia. He will be dearly missed by his loving wife of 54 years, Kathy, of Grovetown, Georgia, his son Keith Roberts and wife Christy of Midland, his daughter LaDonna and wife Maxine of Albuquerque, New Mexico, his granddaughter Lauren Huddleston and husband Brian, and his great-granddaughters Chloe and Leanna Huddleston, all of Harlem, Georgia, his granddaughter Kayla Roberts of the DFW area, his grandson Byron Roberts and wife Kayla Beth of Amarillo, his sister Sandra Greer, his brother Jay Roberts, and his sister-in-law Carmen Roberts, along with many beloved nieces, nephews, and cousins. A memorial service celebrating Larry's life will be held on December 30th at 11 a.m. at Platt Funeral Home in Evans, Georgia. In lieu of flowers, please consider making a donation to the organization of your choice. Platt's Funeral Home and Cremation Services, Evans, Georgia. Please sign the guest book at www.plattsfuneralhome.com. Thomas Ray Ziegler. Thomas Ray Ziegler, 84, of Sweetwater, died Thursday, November 27th, in Sweetwater. Funeral service will be held at 10 a.m. December 4th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Dylan Ferguson of First Presbyterian Church of Midland is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
Council vets new board applicants. Midland Development Corp. board candidates interviewed. The Midland City Council hosted interviews for board appointments with Midland Development Corp., MDC. Four applicants were interviewed with the possibility of more interviews in the future. Quote, we believe that for this and for planning and zoning, these are more consequential boards, and we need to really make sure that we have the right candidates, end quote, said Mayor Lori Blong. There are three vacancies on the MDC board with their terms starting in January. Each term lasts for 3 years, with board members able to serve two terms for a total of 6 years. The vacancies will fill the board seats of Lercy Sams, Jill Pennington, and J. Ross Lacey, the former two of whom will finish out their terms while the latter has already resigned. Sams confirmed with the Reporter Telegram that they are not part of the hiring process. The interviews were originally intended to be held privately in executive session, as is customary for government procedure. However, after discussion in that day's Midland City Council meeting, interviewees were given the chance to have their meetings broadcast live on the city's website and recorded for public access, with all of them ultimately taking this approach. The following applicants were interviewed in order of appearance. Luis D. Sanchez. Sanchez is perhaps best known in Midland for becoming the former Midland County Commissioner for Precinct 3, making him the only applicant with prior service for a taxing entity. He served four terms, but his re-election bid for a fifth ultimately fell short, with Stephen Villela winning the seat. He had hoped to apply for the MDC board while serving as a commissioner, but was unable to because elected officials are barred from serving on the board. Quote, I feel that I am very active still within my community, end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, I feel that South and East Midland, which I hold very close to my heart, I think there is a lot of developmental representation that needs to happen in that area of town. I understand the importance of MDC and the opportunities that are there. I think the MDC board needs someone like myself who can make things happen, end quote. Sanchez says that in addition to expanding MDC's reach to under-focused areas of town, he would try to help publicize them more in order to clear up some misconceptions about the MDC's fundraising practices, such as how the different taxes work and how Midland is able to spend them, and also get the organization more involved in the community. He also would like to expand the MDC's reach on projects and receive community feedback on what projects the MDC should pursue. For the latter, he acknowledged that the things most Midlanders currently seek are more housing and cleaner water. While MDC cannot do anything with the latter, Sanchez touted the former as something MDC should prioritize, along with businesses and new industries that attract people to stay in the city. Quote, if folks who are out in the county running out of water are looking for a place that has water, I think MDC has a great opportunity to really start capitalizing on that to help people, end quote, Sanchez said. Quote, they're not going to leave Midland because they have jobs and families here, but if we can get them from the county back into the city, I think that's one thing I would focus on just because I know that's a problem, end quote. Denzel West. West is the CEO of Admiral Permian Resources, a role he has held for the past 9 years. He has also been on the board of directors for the Permian Basin Petroleum Association since August 2014 and is in line to possibly be its chairman in 2 years. He has also invested in other businesses such as car washes. Additionally, he had been seeking to invest in the Omni Midland Hotel, but decided to hold off on pursuing that to avoid any conflict of interest should his MDC appointment be confirmed. Quote, I have no interest in being in politics. This is about as close to the sun as I'm going to fly, end quote, West said. Quote, but I do feel like there's a point in time where you need to give back to the community. My business still takes a lot of my time, but it doesn't take near as much as it used to. That's really the reason I'm here, is to see if I can serve and help the community in a small way without being an actual politician, end quote. West said his top priority would be to focus on bringing new industries to Midland in order to make the city's economy sustainable long-term beyond oil and gas, citing as examples transportation, hospitality, and the Midland Spaceport. He also would like to continue expanding on necessary infrastructure and bring forth mutual understandings across all parties on what the priorities are, including by increasing transparency. Quote, to me, industry provides the biggest return on investment, end quote, West said. Quote, infrastructure does too, but by bringing more industry to town, we are really literally changing the tax basis, the whole scope of what we're doing as a city, end quote. West said he would evaluate projects based on long-term asymmetrical risk, meaning he would weigh the potential reward being significantly greater than the potential losses. Abraham Behiel. Behiel currently serves as the chair of the Midland Planning and Zoning Commission, having been on the commission for 3 years. Behiel intends to step down from P&Z at the end of the year as his current term expires, and thus the rule barring government officials from applying does not present an issue for him. However, if he is rejected from the MDC board position, he will reconsider reapplying for P&Z. Along with P&Z, he also serves on the board of Bynum School and as the vice president of facility services at Midland Health and has previously worked with Stonegate Fellowship Church. Quote, I'm finding more and more that my skill sets that I thought were initially just for Midland Health could be valuable elsewhere within the community, end quote, Behiel said. Quote, I didn't want any kind of recognition for that. I just wanted to be able to help where I could. Whether that's running 100 miles or whatever it may be, I always jump all in, end quote. Behiel says he wants to focus on businesses that can help improve quality of life, diversify the economy, and bring more jobs to Midland. He believes that bringing jobs and diversifying the economy will, in turn, improve quality of life, and cited an Amazon distribution center as a business he would love to see brought to Midland. The closest one is in South Odessa. As for clearing up misunderstandings, Behiel said he would try to emphasize the focus on what the direct benefits to Midlanders can be. For example, with the Omni Hotel, which he believes is predominantly controversial because people who already live in Midland have no purpose for it, he would try refocusing efforts on people who would use it and can benefit the city, such as visiting sports teams that will then utilize other downtown businesses. Quote, there's a lot that people don't know about city and how it operates until you get involved with the city, end quote, Behiel said. Quote, I was that same person. I was ignorant in a lot of ways, thinking that they shouldn't do things that way or this way, but it's not until you get into the roles that you learn these things. So I would like to get into that role, learn more about it, and then advocate and educate those who need that, end quote. James Griffiths, a longtime Midlander, Griffiths has served in various finance positions in his career, including as the owner of WTI Capital since April 2017. He had previously applied to be on the MDC board a few years ago, but was turned down at that time. Members of P&Z had also recommended him to serve on their commission, but he turned that offer down. Quote, the last 10 to 12 years of my career, I've been in more of a developmental role in the efforts I have led, end quote, Griffiths said. Quote, as I look at the different opportunities in order to serve around Midland, and I look at my background, skill set, and what my passion is, I feel the MDC most aligns with that, end quote. Griffiths said that he has been in communication with MDC Executive Director Sarah Harris on different priorities for the MDC at the moment, but says he would need to be on the board for a specific game plan on priorities. However, he said that one of his goals would be to better promote what they can do and what they have done and to better evaluate the MDC's risk versus reward metrics. Quote, I feel like MDC's got to do a better job of telling its story, end quote, Griffiths said. Quote, I think the biggest skill set I have that won't show up on a resume or application is the ability to take a really complicated story, which I think a lot of these funding opportunities are, breaking it up into pieces and being able to explain why we're doing this, what interest there is in this, and what we think the benefits are going to be, end quote. Midland City Council hosted interviews for board appointments with Midland Development Corporation, MDC. Four applicants were interviewed with the possibility of more interviews in the future. but we believe that for this and for planning and zoning, there are more consequential boards, and we need to really make sure that we have the right candidates, end quote, said Mayor Lori Blom. There are three vacancies on the MDC board, with their terms starting in January. Each term lasts for 3 years, with board members being able to serve two terms for a total of 6 years. The vacancies will look to fill the board seats, but not the positions of Lercy Jane Sams, Jill Pennington, and J. Ross Lacey, the former two of whom will finish out their terms while the latter has already resigned. Sams confirmed with the Reporter Telegram that they are not part of the hiring process. These interviews were originally intended to be held privately in executive session, per usual government procedure. However, after discussion in that day's Midland City Council meeting, the interviewees were given the chance to have their meetings broadcast live on the city's website and kept for recording purposes, with all of them ultimately taking this approach. These are the interviewees in order of their interview. Luis D. Sanchez, Denzel West, Abraham Bahil, James Griffiths.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the oil report of the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, November 29. Eicher Express Pipeline upsizes to 3.7 billion cubic feet per day. The story was written by Miller McEwen, oil editor. Even before construction begins, the Eicher Express Pipeline is already being expanded. Whitewater this week announced the expansion of the pipeline's mainline capacity from 2.5 billion cubic feet per day to 3.7 billion cubic feet per day after securing additional firm transportation agreements since announcing the project in August. To accommodate the expansion, the mainline is being upsized from a 42-inch to 48-inch diameter pipeline, along with incremental compression being installed. The Eicher Express is expected to enter service in mid-2028. The Eicher Express pipeline will transport natural gas from the Permian Basin to the Katy area. The pipeline is owned by a joint venture of Matterhorn JV, 70%, One Oak, 15%, and MPLX, 15%. The Matterhorn JV is owned by Whitewater, 65%, One Oak, 15%, MPLX, 10%, and Enbridge, 10%. The joint venture owns long-haul natural gas pipelines, which transport natural gas from the Permian Basin to the Gulf Coast, with direct connections to LNG export markets. The pipeline will source natural gas from processing facilities, including those owned by One Oak and MPLX, and pipeline connections in the Midland and Delaware basins, including gas processing facilities in the Midland Basin and from the Delaware Basin via the Agua Blanca Pipeline, a joint venture between Whitewater, Enbridge, and MPLX. The Eicher Express is one of several greenfield pipeline projects being planned, raising concerns about a pipeline overbuild. However, a pipeline overbuild depends on if Permian producers can see solid returns from gas-directed drilling, according to Orrant Pilot with East Daily Analytics. If the current West Texas intermediate weighted drilling activity persists, exploration and production companies won't be able to grow gas volumes meaningfully, he told the Reporter Telegram. But he expects producers to adapt to the rapidly growing gas market. Quote, in our view, some amount of excess pipeline capacity is important to close the price spread between Waha and Henry Hub, allowing producers to grow production without fear of hitting capacity constraints and driving Waha prices negative, as in 2024, he said. Permian Basin needs more wells, says EIA. The story was written by Mellon McEwen, oil editor. Horizontal drilling has helped Permian Basin oil output surge to over 6 million barrels a day and lifted U.S. output to a record 13.6 million barrels a day. But as production volumes have increased, so too has the volume of production declines from existing wells, note analysts at the Energy Information Administration. To offset those declines, analysts say operators must bring on more new wells to sustain or increase production levels. The increasing number of horizontal wells has contributed to the volume of production declines because horizontal wells exhibit higher decline rates than vertical wells because they have a high initial production rate with a steep decline relative to vertical wells, according to the analysts. In the mid-2000s, operators began to drill more horizontal wells, which allow them to recover more oil and natural gas quickly after initial production begins than from vertical wells. In December 2024, horizontal wells produced 94% of oil and 92% of natural gas in the lower 48 states. Drilling large numbers of new horizontal wells to maintain or increase production levels could prove challenging. Reuters notes the oil and gas rig count declined by about 5% in 2024, following a 20% decline in 2023. Between 2010 and 2024, hydrocarbon production from new wells in the lower 48 states generally offset and exceeded declining production from existing wells. In December 2023, lower 48 crude oil production averaged 11 million barrels per day. Production from wells that came online in 2023 or earlier fell to 6.7 million barrels per day in December 2024, a decline of 4.3 million barrels per day. Those declines were offset by the more than 15,000 new wells that were brought online in 2024, about 11,700 of which were horizontal wells. The new wells produced 4.4 million barrels per day of crude oil, enough to overcome declines from existing wells, bringing lower 48 crude oil production to 11.2 million barrels per day in December 2024. Between December 2023 and December 2024, natural gas production from wells that came online in 2023 or earlier fell from 115.4 billion cubic feet per day to 88.4 BCF per day, a decline of 27.0 BCF per day. New wells offset those declines, producing an average of 28 BCF per day of natural gas in December 2024. Lower 48 production of natural gas increased to 116.5 BCF per day in December 2024. Headlock founders expand beyond oil and gas roots. The story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. Headlock Investment Company was born out of the 40-year friendship between founding partners Jack Harper and Dan Horde as they sought a vehicle to invest in oil and gas, real estate, and financial assets. Their investments are balanced between the three, and one investment is about to come to fruition, the Omni Midland Hotel, which is scheduled to break ground this coming March. Quote, "We need to think bigger. We need to think ahead. We need to have infrastructure for quality of life," explained Harper. Headlock, which is an acronym for their six children, three each, began 20 years ago with a 30,000-acre position in the northern Midland Basin at a time when Interstate 20 was still seen as the demarcation line, according to Harper. In the interim, Harper joined Concho Resources and, when it merged with ConocoPhillips, he became Executive Vice President of the Lower 48 before moving on to focus full-time on Headlock. One of the big changes observed recently has been the consolidation in the upstream sector, which has changed the dynamic, Harper said. Quote, it's that much harder to find assets, he said. Harper sees operators continuing to gain efficiencies, doing more with less, and utilizing technology like drilling longer laterals. Quote, when you think they've reached the limit, they find new things, he said. Horde agreed, quote, recompleting wells, deeper horizons, the engineering curve has changed, end quote. The two are involved in two startups, serving as co-chief executive officers of North Star Resources, an exploration and production company active in the Delaware Basin. They also have passive ownership in Rockwood Resources, a mineral and royalty acquisition company. Challenges have arisen as the area has grown, and Harper and Hort helped through involvement in various organizations and investments. Harper serves as chairman of the Permian Strategic Partnership. They are also involved with the Abel Hanger Foundation. The goal is to be a catalyst for making things happen, he added. Quote, put our money where our mouth is, end quote. Quote, it goes to how to diversify Midland and how we utilize what God gave us to create opportunities. Water treatment, power generation, AI centers. They all utilize the things we have and the skill sets of the people here, Horde said. Continued Harper, quote, we ultimately invest in people, make bets on people. We try to make what we have better is one goal. We're also working on how to integrate families, the next generation in business, to directly or indirectly provide for families, end quote. He said he finds the influx of young professionals into Midland inspiring. Quote, it gives me confidence in what the next several decades will look like, end quote. Permian Basin propels rise in U.S. natural gas. This story was written by Mella McEwen, oil editor. The Permian Basin's role as the nation's dominant crude oil producing region is translating to a role as the nation's dominant natural gas producing region. According to the U.S. Energy Information Administration, U.S. production of associated dissolved natural gas, also known as associated natural gas, increased by 6% in 2024. This mirrored the growth in crude oil production from the Permian region. Associated natural gas production averaged 18.5 billion cubic feet per day in 2024, according to data from Enverus Drilling Info. The EIA reports the Permian Basin accounted for most of the growth in the associated natural gas production in last year, increasing 8% to 12.5 BCF per day and accounting for 47% of total Permian natural gas production. Supported by an average West Texas intermediate crude oil price of $77 per barrel, oil-directed drilling in the Permian increased in 2024. Permian region crude oil production accounted for almost all U.S. growth in 2024, rising by 377,000 barrels per day, compared with 2023 to average 6.3 million barrels per day, which led to the increase in natural gas production. Associated natural gas, which is natural gas produced by wells that predominantly produce oil, comes mainly from five major oil-producing regions in the United States: the Permian, Bakken, Eagle Ford, Anadarko, and Niobrara. In 2024, associated natural gas production in these regions averaged 18.2 BCF per day, an increase of 1.0 BCF per day from 2023. Associated natural gas production accounted for 37% of the total natural gas production from these regions in 2023 and 2024. The EIA defines oil wells as those with a gas-to-oil ratio of less than or equal to 6,000 cubic feet of natural gas per barrel of oil produced. The EIA classifies wells with a GOR of more than 6 MCF per barrel as natural gas wells. In 2024, 67% of the Bakken's natural gas production came from associated gas, the largest share in the five producing regions. The Bakken produced 2.3 BCF per day of associated gas, and the Eagle Ford produced 1.8 BCF per day of associated gas.
This is the Dear Abby column. Unwelcome advances may threaten long-time friendship. Dear Abby, I'm struggling with my integrity and an important friendship. My friend Beth's husband, Jerry, came to my house to help with a construction project. After discussing the project, we sat down to visit for a bit. He was very forward with me and overly affectionate. It's been 10 years since I've had any affection. He also talked about how affection doesn't have to mean anything, which I believe is true to an extent. I told him it was inappropriate, but I didn't stop either of us when Jerry kissed me before leaving. Part of me was thrilled at being kissed again, even though I know it was wrong. I am sure that I won't allow it to happen again. I'm afraid to contact him and deliver that message directly because there's a chance it wouldn't be a private message. I couldn't tolerate Beth knowing this happened. I treasure her friendship. I've no idea if Jerry said anything to her about what happened. I'm panicked that I may have lost a treasured friend. Advice? Signed, Afraid and Worried. Dear Afraid, I do have some. If Jerry behaved this way with you, it is likely that he does this with other women who consult him about construction projects. I don't think it is necessary for you to inform Beth about what happened. But seriously consider using another construction company for your repairs now and in the future. Jerry appears to be a classic cheater, and you are vulnerable after a long dry spell. Dear Abby, my son Grant, who is 37, is autistic. My ex-wife removed him from a group home 5 years ago and took him out of the country. I made a mistake years ago by allowing her to have guardianship. I tried to stop them from leaving. I have had zero communication with my ex or Grant in those 5 years. My 40-year-old daughter, her three children, and her husband live with me. I have another daughter, aged 35, who lives independently. My daughters have been in constant communication with their mother. My ex comes to the U.S. once a year and meets with them. Both daughters had difficult younger years because Grant was violent. I have a good relationship with both of them, but every time I ask about Grant, I receive angry responses. I wouldn't be surprised if Grant is no longer alive. I realize I likely don't have that many more years and may depart this world without knowing anything about him. I haven't had a photo or a word. Is there anything I can do? Signed, Sad Father in New Jersey. Dear Sad Father, so your ex-wife and daughters have a code of silence regarding the whereabouts and welfare of your son. How cruel. Of course, there is something you can do. Pick up the phone, discuss this with your lawyer, and ask what information he or she can unearth about Grant. If necessary, hire a private detective to uncover where your ex took him and whether he's still living. You have my sympathy. Dear Abby is written by Abigail Van Buren, also known as Jean Phillips. Was founded by her mother Pauline Phillips. Contact Dear Abby at www.dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.